Monday morning. It's what, the 27th, almost the end of May already. Ludicrous and freezing cold. My car said to me 2 degrees this morning when I was driving out of the house, which is not nice. You know, when there's ice on the top of it, that's not so nice. Anyway, we're alive, we're here, we're well. I hope your weekend was good. Let us know what you got up to. And we've got Sims standing in for James as producer this morning. We've got Flex here, so everything's fine. We're in good, safe hands. In fact, who knows? It may just work out extremely well. Huh? Oh, I think so. All right, and we have a guest here, Kurt Egelhoff, who's an icon in the South African theatre and art scene. He's also been involved in so many projects that you may already know. Ghost in the Darkness, Last Victims, Zulu Love Letters, The Native Who Caused All the Trouble, Wind Prince, Perfume of the Cyclone. Like, these are impressive things. How are you? Nice to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. It's a pleasure. Mm-hmm. And impressive is a subjective opinion.
Well, I'll tell you what is impressive is that you have directed, and I've always wanted to get under the hood of South African soap operas because they are by far the most popular genre of television in this country. And by far, I mean, nothing comes close. Game shows are like trailing behind it.
Yeah.
News, sport, sport, different thing because it's event-based, right? Yeah. Some sports shoot the lights out. Other ones, nobody cares.
Yeah.
But soap operas are like the mainstay.
Okay. So I think Isidingo was like the trendsetter in terms of soap operas as the first daily. No, not Igoli was the first daily at a certain point. But Isidingo took away the soapy aspect of these things and replaced it with a dramatic aspect. So it wasn't like 5-10 seconds on a reaction shot before we fade to black. It was dramatic. And so we labeled it daily drama.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, you were involved in the capacity of?
Well,
with the soap operas?
In the capacity of creator.
Okay.
Yeah, there was four or five of us. Grey Hoffmeyer put a team together.
Right.
And I was invited to be on that team. So where did Grey Hoffmeyer get the momentum or the impetus to do this? I don't know if you're old enough to remember The Villages.
That was before
okay,
me.
Okay, doesn't matter.
Tell everybody.
I was lucky to watch it on TV and later on work with some of those people. But The Villages was a weekly drama. When the SABC finally got themselves going in 76, they said, but we need some English drama because we have an English audience in this country as well. And somebody knew that Grey Hoffmeyer had been a floor manager at the BBC. And that was good enough. So they turned to him and they said, write us a daily English drama. And he came up with The Villages. It was set on a mine. Okay, back in the day, it was exclusively a white community.
Well, that's how the country was,
And wonderful actors, man. Come on. Victor Melany, you know, Gordon Mulholland, Stuart Brown, all of those iconic people.
Right.
Yeah, and so when I came to Joburg, got involved in the blah and the blah and the blah blah in arts and culture, I got invited by Grey Hoffmeyer because the SABC said, Grey, we want you to bring The Villages into the new South Africa.
Shit, so that was the genesis of Isidingo.
That's the genesis of Isidingo. Very few people know this. And I was privileged to sit down with four other people with a blank page and say, what are we going to do here?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm amazed at the fact that these things last as long as they do. You've got to keep finding new angles, new stories.
Correct.
Is that difficult?
Well, let's just give the cue.
Because this is the days before AI. You couldn't just say, generate me six scripts for the week, you know?
So let's give the kudos to the writers of our country, the people who stayed up late to come up with the scripts. Once the concept was there, this is a new South African daily drama set on a mine. The writers were given, in a horse racing, you say, give the horse its head. The writers were given their head, and there was go. I had to write a couple of scripts because it was, you know, we had to build up the wardrobe, I mean the closet of scripts quickly. So it went right. So I only wrote like four scripts with Neil McCarthy. And they took over and they created the drug that became Isidingo. They created the cliffhanger concept. Mm. Ooh, pardon the pun, brother.
Yeah. No, but it's true. And actresses like Michelle Buertus, God rest her soul, she was phenomenal, right?
Oh, she was a powerhouse, man. And right from the beginning, we latched on quickly. You see, I had an acting career behind me of approximately 20 years before I got involved in Isidingo.
Mm-hmm.
So I spoke the vocabulary, I had the emotional vibrations of an actor.
Right.
And so when I was writing and getting involved in learning how to direct, as soon as I was given my head to go and direct, the actors were like, oh no, it's this actor guy. He's now the director. And we immediately bonded. And Michelle Boortis particularly, you know, if you've been an actor all your life, you understand vulnerability. And I'm just going to say it out clear here. All actors are extremely vulnerable people.
Yeah.
Who put out a facade through the character.
Sure.
Like, I'm cool. So Michelle saw that I respected her vulnerability. And so she took me into her confidence. And when I asked her to plumb to the depths, she plumbed to the depths for that Cherelle character.
Yeah.
And rise to the height. She rose to the height. Wilson.
And I remember not being a soap opera fan, but watching her, because she had such a... something gripping about whenever she came onto the screen.
Oh, man.
She's just evil, you know? And she could do that so damn well.
Yeah, well, look, she got those big eyes, or she had those big eyes, right? And when she looked at you with that cold stare as the character Cherelle,
yes,
who was a chief villain, you know?
Oh.
I think even the character Pierre, her husband, played by Wilson Dunster,
oh,
even that character was afraid of her up to a point until he lost his marbles as well. And started drinking. And I directed that scene where the great Wilson Dunster lost his marbles, or the character Pierre. And I asked him to do things that nobody asked. I said, pour the drink, contemplate how this woman has really screwed you over. And when it's finished, throw this glass into the liquor cabinet. The art department were like, excuse me, what? You know how much money's inside there? I said, you know how much money's here?
So you broke the rules and
broke
the cabinet. I broke
the rule and broke the cabinet. And even Wilson Dunster was like, Kurt, are you sure? I said, I'm sure. And I'd worked with him in Senior Smith in a previous life. I said, I'm sure, Wilson. Just do it, my man. And so one take, Jake, yeah? You know, got all the cameramen sorted, liquor, because you must cover it on every angle, plus the close-up on the liquor cabinet. And he did the thing, man. And I got tearful up there in the control room, because he started crying at the character's helplessness for this domineering woman called Cherelle de Villiers.
Yes.
It was lovely stuff. That's why it wasn't a soap, my man.
I'm just amazed at how the people of this country respond to that stuff, because you've worked on Isidingo, but you've also worked on Scandal backstage.
Okay, cool. Can I put the linear progression of time?
Yeah, I want to hear this stuff. And
okay.
By the way, there's some comments coming in too. You can join us on the YouTube and hop on there. And there are a couple of people saying that they saw The Villagers and they used to love it.
Sure.
That's a long time ago.
So you see the continuity of consciousness.
Sure.
And that's a good thing, I think, because it shows continuity in the society.
Mm.
And when you've got continuity in the society, people feel safe, because they know the past. Otherwise, they start like, where did this thing come from? What did this? Cognitive dissonance.
Out of the blue.
Cognitive dissonance. I'm not getting involved in this. I don't know diddly squat about this, where it comes from. So Scandal and Backstage went in this linear progression. I had been nominated for 2 years in a row as a director for Isidingo, the only single solo director 2 years in a row. The other nominees were the team of directors for Isidingo. So I was already 2 out of 3. And the team of directors for Generations.
Huh.
Yeah, for 2 years. And obviously, I think it was just too much of an insult to say to the team of both directors, this individual director did better work than you. I'm still coming back to Scandal and Backstage. Don't let me not slip.
How do you how do you describe the boss of or the job of director to people? Because it's a very peculiar role, actually.
100%.
Like, you're actually in charge of the whole set. You're
correct.
In charge of all the actors. You've got to get something in the box and have something recorded that's perfect to use, that the editors can do something with. But sometimes it gets a little untidy.
Well, I like to think of, replace the phrase in charge of with responsible for.
Okay.
Yeah, right? You are responsible for this.
Okay.
And if you think of a budget of upwards of 30 million rand per annum, you know, you got to be very responsible. So what does this job entail? We'll come back to Backstage and Scandal, because it's easy to forget these things. The job entails, first, you need to know the craft. And having been in front of the camera in a multi-camera studio environment as an actor, I would watch because I never had a lot of dialogue. I was the bomb and in the back only having a line or two. Hey, let's look at to be two-tone kind of cliches.
Is that what you had to do?
Hello. I'm not going to say who wrote it. But anyway, it was called Senior Smith and there it was. And
okay.
So I watched. I had a lot of time to watch how the cameras operate. So when my turn came and Grace said, okay, you're going to progress from writing and creating the first interview, go and train on Joburg Blues. I don't know if you remember that. And I got an opportunity to multicam direct. What are you responsible for in the craft? An average of 3 cameras at a time, a whole crew in the control room, cutting according to your camera script. So you get given the script, and next to the camera, next to the script, you make your pencil marks, very linear, nice, straight lines. You describe the shot, medium close-up, over-shoulder, favoring Chirelle. So the cameraman can read that. You need to learn that vocabulary, right?
Sure.
And there's, in the beginning, you want to put 100 shots on one page. The viewer's going to be like, and you learn to make only 4, 5, 6 cuts in a whole page of dialogue. People call it TikTok. I hate the word TikTok because go TikTok, TikTok, this guy.
Don't worry, I hate TikTok too.
No, but not that TikTok.
I know.
Forgive me. I don't mean to diss 100 million people around the world.
I don't mind.
And so, what you're responsible for, once you know the craft and the management of the hardware, and the Indian producers and directors call people software. You need to manage the software. These are the human beings. You need to gain their trust because what is the fundamental root of being a director? You must direct. You can't be in the wrong jungle and giving directions, cut this bush this way, cut this way, and be in the wrong jungle. You got to know you're in the right jungle and you got to carve the path that the people trust and they look and they just see 1 or 2 episodes on the screen. They go like, this guy knows what he's doing. And they come back the next week and they commit to you more. And you got to appreciate that. You got to take that and uplift them because they've uplifted you.
So a couple of people here, when the people talking about, you know, Seven Dillon, I was indoctrinated by Seven Dillon. Now I'm out of that mindset, says Bitcoin Boot. Someone's asking, where's Leanne? She had an op and she will be back next Monday.
Bless her. I hope she gets
we
well.
Don't have her at the moment. Thank you, Goon. And then let's just see here. We've got The Village. Is The Village not an M. Night Shyamalan?
That's an American
movie.
We just call him Mr. Night. Right. That's an American movie, The Village. It's set in a kind of Quaker.
Yeah, I remember that. I watched it.
The Villagers is what you're talking about.
Hello. I can't believe it's Monday again, says Busset Sana. Well, that's how it works. Sunday leads to Monday, you know?
Yes, indeed.
I hope I'll have power later today because they've been supposedly been fixing this thing.
Right. So
for the last week, I have had no hot water. So, I mean, I go to the gym to shower, but yes. You know, you take little things for granted. Now, I know I could survive like this for a long time because I've got water, but it's not hot water. Mm. And I've got a little bit of electricity because I've got solar. Mm. So I'm already in a better position than most people, and I shouldn't complain too much.
Correct, 100%.
But my God, let me tell you, you get up in the morning and you have to hop in a cold shower or you have to wash your face or shave or any of those things. Yes.
If you want any reassurance about that condition, just think back to when your mom was telling you how to suck it up when you were a little kid.
Yes.
And it's the same value system that she gave you that you need now to survive. No electricity, no water.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So anyway, let's go back to Backstage and Scandal, if you don't mind.
Yeah. I'm amazed at the fact that there's this broad range of different soap operas. They all appeal to different audiences for different reasons.
Absolutely correct.
But we have no shortage of varieties of kind of angle and age and...
You know what was so amazing about Isidingo? It was a cutter through the cake of South Africa. You know, if you cut through a cake, you check the layers. Mm. So it defied apartheid consciousness by saying, these people don't exist separately from each other in silos. Yeah. This is a mine community. They exist because they exist together. So Isidingo explored that dynamic. And I think that created the mass appeal that very few soapies were able to achieve because the majority of them got stuck in the silos of cultural exclusivity, you know?
For sure. So what was the aim for a show like Backstage?
Right. So there we are. Fame from America.
Right.
I'm going to make it forever.
No, that one.
That one, right?
Okay.
So a very wise decision by Mfundi Vundla, who the owner of...
He was a genius.
Owner of Generations. He just said, I'm going to come up with a South African concept. He pitched it.
Right.
They went for it, and there it was. But this is how I got into backstage now. Mfundi and Grey were old khabas. I think that's a Joburg word.
It is. It means friends.
Yeah, they were old friends. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mfundi said, Grey, help me out here. Cut and paste your team. And I was like one of the freshest dudes on the team, and I got cut and paste to Cape Town to create backstage.
They did that in Cape Town, not in Joburg.
That's why it was so good.
Oh, okay. All right. No, it explains
about,
a lot.
No, it was about the youth cultural uprising in terms of art schools. It was a city in an art school, fame. And they mixed the cultures a lot as well, similar to Isidingo, because the same writers were, not the same writers, but similar writers were involved. And it appealed to the youth because it was a youth-driven thing. It had music, dancing, acting. And it had all the trauma of trying to stay alive at like 19 years old up to 25 years old. It was fabulous. So that's how Backstage was born. That's the DNA behind it. And Mfundi just said, you guys do it. So we went like a team, cut and paste, and did that. And then Scandal transpired. I'll come back to Backstage if you wish, with pleasure. Scandal transpired once these genres had become rooted in South Africa. Somebody said, hey, let's put one in a journalist office, in the news desk. And so people who were ex-journalists and ex-news desk people who were now running the ETV, they called for that shot, and Scandal was created. I didn't create Scandal. I was just roped in to help it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I started thinking I'm becoming a little bit of a hitman here in the soapy world, a little bit of an assassin. When there's trouble, they call Kurt.
But how do you measure the success of these things? How do the channels, the commissioning editors, the producers, the creators, how do they figure out that a show is tremendous runaway success?
So there's an extremely detailed data-generating function called ARs.
Yeah.
Right.
Audience ratings.
Correct.
Yeah.
But before you get there, you need to know what your target market is. Who are you targeting? And this is also highly detailed and structured. LSM, I don't know, I've forgotten it because I've been out of that world for so long now. LSM 12, I think. Yeah.
The lifestyle standard measures.
Yes, sir.
They still use this shit.
I'm not surprised. Look, Gray always said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, but I would have always said that the way to tell is to use those ratings, obviously, but they do change from time to time,
100%.
Depending on all kinds of factors.
100%.
Also, the duration of a show, like how long has it been on?
Yeah.
Because Isidingo, for example.
20-something years. Even bless you. Bless you, my guy. Cool. Even Generations, third time for luck. Even Generations also ran like that. But in terms of how do you measure, you take those stats and you see what the people are talking about.
Yeah.
However they are expressing their opinions, whether it's in the newspapers or in the digital world. And you let the writers take a chance. Now, let's just get real here about taking a chance in South Africa.
Yeah, what does that mean?
The first cultural boundary crossed was in Isidingo, where a black man and a white woman kissed on camera.
Da-da-da.
Shomla Dandala.
I know Shomla Dandala.
Wow, he's a good dude, man.
Awesome guy.
Yeah, and what was her name? I've forgotten her name. She's a fantastic actress as well. Amato. I knew her dad. That's why I've forgotten her name. Amato, I'll get to it. Her character's name was Philippa and Derek Kenyatta. And they were immediately like energized by each other, the characters, when they met. So it was already like, we can see the airways going. And the writers took that chance. And they went all the way. And guess who got to direct that episode, that scene? Mwah.
How fantastic.
It was fantastic. I got goose flesh when I watched them doing the thing I asked them to do. And I'm a bit old school, wrong side of 60-something.
Yeah.
So I went down where my parents would have gone. I said, get on your knees, my dude. Kneel down in front of this woman and ask her to be your lover. We're not asking to get married right this minute, but just as if it's a marriage proposal. And he was like, but trust. Remember we spoke about it a little earlier?
Of course.
He trusted my call. He went for it. And they were fantastic.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
One of my friends got a very small role in Isidingo, says Hameen. We were super excited and all got together to watch the episode. They cut all the parts where she was speaking. Shit. Luckily, she laughed with us. How's that?
This happens. tell that person, I've been a victim of that too. You know, I went to like 10 calls on a movie, and then I went to watch the movie, and I dipped down for the popcorn, looked up, and I was gone, you know, in the movie house. So there's a duration issue, always, always, always. And there's always a flow issue, like is the whole episode cutting together, hanging nicely? And sometimes at no time are these decisions just arbitrary. Oh, I think I'll take that person out today.
Yeah.
They are carefully made decisions to try and keep the flow
and,
of
and
the
killing
thing.
Off a character, that's fun, right?
Yes, yes.
So if you do want to get rid of someone,
yes,
you just figure out a really creative way of getting
my dude,
them to die.
Once they say, they are organizing a bus trip to the Kruger Park. Watch out. There's an en masse blood wedding coming from a blood wedding, a term from,
sure, from Game of Thrones. Yeah.
When you can see, hey, the writers are starting to lean towards this way. If you're the actor, they're starting to lean this towards this way. When I was producing for supervisor producer for Generations, I was getting this information from the writing department, and I'd call the actors in and say, hey, they're talking like this about you there. Up your game.
Really?
Yeah.
That's how you can pick it up. So so in hierarchy, because I think this is often how people think of these things, because you imagine the actors are the most important, but they're not.
They're not.
And they're not. You've just pointed out that the lowly writers can hold the balls of those actors in their hands.
The writers are the gods of that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's think of the actors as the nose of the train, the one that hits the wind, you know, as this train is going.
Yeah.
Think of a steam train. It's a nice image. But this thing that's going underneath, making the wheels turn, that's the people behind the scenes. And the editing, so important.
Yo, says Tracy, that episode where Sherelle killed off Barker's son, who was also her scallopy. Yes, like TV gold.
Cool.
Yeah.
So can I just answer my dear listener there? I had left already by the time Barker Haynes came on board.
Okay.
Because I got cut and paste to backstage.
Right. Okay.
And Isidingo took a whole new move. However, I came back to Joburg one time and I was shopping in the Checkers there. And Michelle Botas came up to me. Hello, darling. A long time no see. And I'd already been living in Cape Town for like 10 years. And we had a long discussion and she was telling me she had enough and that she was definitely going to leave, because maybe 3 or 4 years earlier we had a private conversation where she said, I'm done with this.
Well, I can imagine it must get
hectic.
Yeah, but also get boring for them after a while.
Yeah,
because
and he must,
you, the audience wants you to keep playing the same character. There's never really any development because they've got to keep her evil and straightforward and she's a bad person.
Yeah.
You know, and eventually you just mine enough.
And I think what was different about the South African version of Daily Soap compared to Bold and Beautiful Days of Life, blah, 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 I think in order to run for 40 years, you've got to grow with your audience, right?
Yeah.
And South Africa, very difficult culture to grow with your audience.
Yeah.
Because the values are just changing. And these are ever-changing times. The values are just shifting all the time. And the writers are battling to stay abreast of what's current and what's attractive. Whereas Days of Our Lives and then those people, they built their studio sets in their homes. Their houses looked exactly like their studio sets. And so they were addicted. And so... yeah, they changed.
Well, here's an interesting one too from Sade, who says, we all know it was Stefano from Days of Our Lives. He's always behind everything.
So, you see,
people just loved this stuff because it was also something that you would do to just tune out from the world.
100%.
Right? It's like escapism.
So there's a theory about why people dig baddies and want to watch the baddies. And I picked this up during the days of Dallas, which we only had that.
J.R. Ewing was the
eternal baddie. And somebody put the proposition forward that character, JR, represented the arc, the maximum baddie you can have. Therefore, I'm not so bad in my stuff, in my shit. That's the real bad guy.
That's what it is. It's people. People want to feel, okay, I might be a terrible person, but I'm not as bad as that guy.
You nailed it. It's a vicarious shift.
Schadenfreude.
You got it.
Right.
And so that's why Stefano was so popular. We knew, hey, you messing with him now? In 3 episodes, he's going to bust your balls. Yeah, and South Africa was slightly different because, yeah, we were...
Papa G was the man in Isidingo,
says Georgie.
Yeah. And here we go. Listen to this. I've never watched a single episode of any South African soap. Not Igoli, not Muvango, not Isidingo, not Backstage, nothing.
Yeah.
Does that make me a bad South African, says Carl?
Tell that person I said with a capital no, big N-O, no. That doesn't got nothing to do with your values as a human being.
Okay. You know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, a couple of things that are in the news that people want to talk about.
Sure.
First of all, it turns out that after all the umming and ahhing and messing around, some kind of deal has been struck. Apparently, we're getting Starlink in South Africa.
That's bizarre. I just read this yesterday about this whole thing and the positioning.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to go into that White House meeting, if you don't mind.
Yo.
I don't want to go into that. But I do acknowledge that the Starlink door being open to South Africa is a major shift in our culture.
You know, I saw an interview with Elon the other day where a journalist, I think he was in Qatar at some economic forum there, said to him, you know, there are rules in South Africa. You have to have 30% black ownership. That's why you won't open Starlink there. And he said, yeah, but do you think that's right? Mm. And she wouldn't answer it because she said, oh, I'm asking the questions. And he persisted to ask her, do you think that's right? And I think eventually... it all just deteriorated.
Mm.
But I don't think he even likes the idea of being given special preferential treatment. So how did this happen then?
Can I just say that I think, in my personal opinion, it's still early days. If we think of that as a piece of theater that happened there.
Sure.
And everyone got a different takeaway line from the performance. They go home with different things. And because we are still in early days of the ramifications of where that thing's going to go and what's going to happen. I think it's too premature to start making faster opinions. What's the word I'm looking for in English? Solid, concrete opinions about what happened and where is it going to go. Let's see how it evolves. You know, when state capture happened or started happening, we didn't know.
Well, if you know more about this than we do, particularly the Starlink thing, I saw a headline. That's all I know. So I don't actually have any details. But there's way, way saucier stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
So just in case you don't know, and our guest is Kurt Egelhoff, by the way. He's here with us to just hang out this Monday morning.
Indeed.
We're talking about all kinds of crap. You do want to talk about some things like cognitive dissonance later.
Don't worry.
Which we'll get to.
And we'll talk about my books that I'm very busy reading.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. All right. Yeah, yeah, we can find out all about that.
Of course.
Mac G was axed from TV after a controversial comment about Mini Dlamini. So TV channel Mzansi Magic has dropped Podcast and Chill with Mac G for offensive comments. We all knew this was bound to happen at some point. You know, I'm a friend of Mac G's. I don't have any issues with him being vulgar and rude. But apparently he said terrible things about Mini Dlamini. So the remarks which are seen as... I know what you want. You want me to tell you what it is that he said. I'll get there in a second. The remarks which are seen as degrading and inappropriate sparked public backlash and led to the cancellation of the TV broadcast of the podcast, though it continues online. DSTV said that the decision reflects the commitment to upholding respectful and responsible content. I don't think that TV channels or people who work for them necessarily know what's decent and what isn't. Most of the time, they'll just do anything for ratings. The internet is not worse or better. It's just exactly the same. It's people holding up mirrors to themselves. I think you'd probably agree, Kurt.
I agree, but I have no opinion about the Mac G discussion because I have no knowledge of it.
Okay, so apparently, and I didn't until this morning, but Simpiwe told me that what he did, is this during a roast or did he just say this? Did he just say this on the show?
Yeah, they were just talking about how her relationship
went. Okay, so apparently, yeah, like Minenhle Dlamini's been through like a lot of relationships and they were saying, why is it not working out? And Mac G said he reckons it's because her vagina stinks, which is a terrible thing to say. I mean, I think that's very rude.
Literally.
And very mean. And poor Minnie, she doesn't deserve that. I've met Mini Dlamini before. I didn't smell anything. I think she seems fine. But Mac G said this, and now he cannot have his show on DSTV.
Yeah, that's below the belt, if you pardon the pun.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah,
horrible.
You don't take those sort of issues with the... Your opinions on those sort of issues must remain private opinions. You can't start going in public and talking about people's things, the shape of their nose,
etc. Yeah, exactly. No, I think that we've just gone almost, we've jumped the shark in some ways, right? Like you know what jumped the shark is. You love that.
I love that.
Because anyone who's produced anything for TV knows that you can sometimes go too far.
Yeah, we jumped the shark.
And if you go too far, then people stop taking you seriously.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there are a lot of South African celebrities who are always doing anything they can for attention. Mm. But there are other ones whose lives have moved on and who are not particularly interested in being part of that anymore. And in some ways, I don't know that Minnie Dlamini is at the attention-seeking stage anymore. I think she kind of lives her life, and having relationships is very hard, especially if you're a well-known person or you're successful. We all know that. It's not to say that it's easy for poor people who don't have anything going on or not famous, but yeah, someone like that in the public eye, it's tough.
So in a personality's career, you start from a zero and you get to the crossroad at some point.
Yeah.
The crossroad is celebrity this way, artist this way. What you going to do?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to decide.
And so a lot of people, because of the hustle, decided, I need the exposure, I need the publicity.
Right.
And they create false controversy, you know, fake things that they think will stimulate their public awareness. Me, I made a commitment when I got to that crossroad. I said, I live in a very broken society. I was raised by a very broken society. And I've had a moment of enlightenment. So I'm going to commit to uplifting the society in any way I can. And so all those potential hooks and traps to talk shit about other people,
yeah,
I abandoned that. I didn't go down that road. And I wish more artists would take this responsibility and uplift our nation like
this. I think there's a huge amount of say something controversial, get a whole lot of attention, and then
ridiculous.
But then you have to keep it up, right?
Like we said, once you get the first check, you think you got a new lifestyle.
And it's exhausting.
It's exhausting.
So we were looking at some people in Hollywood, and we were talking about this P. Diddy thing, which we'll get to in a moment or two with Hanan, because this is fascinating to me. The lengths that people will go to stay relevant. And a lot of pressure starts at an early stage of someone's career, and then they start almost becoming addicted to that pressure, to that need for attention.
I'm sure.
Pathological.
I'm sure that is a global syndrome that is tried and tested, and it's true what you just said. It becomes pathological. So with regard to the P. Diddy situation, I was alerted to this by my adult kids.
Right.
Just for the record, and I'm not bragging about this or trying to, I'm 66 years old. I'm forbay.
You're not interested in pop culture anymore.
I'm not. Yeah.
I could barely be asked.
So I stepped away. But my children said, like, Dad, chick, what's happening? Yeah. So I was forced to go and have a look.
How many kids you got?
Three.
Okay.
41, 36, 31. That's
sure.
Their ages.
And what did you think of the story when you saw it?
I was not surprised. Another one of my big heroes, someone that I try and watch everything they do, is Cat Williams.
Yeah.
And when he did that interview,
yes,
when they were drinking the brandy, I was like, it was, I think it was late 23, and he said, 2024 gonna be the year of revelation, all the truth gonna come out, you're gonna see these people exposed. And it so happened. And I wasn't like drawn to this thing to get involved in it. I just said, I'm not surprised. I can totally understand how people are willing to sign a deal with the devil in order to advance their careers and bring their children into this deal, and that's not me. So I just walked away from it. I said, do what you got to do, guys. Live what you got to live. This is me here, and this is my responsibility.
Do you think it is a deal with the devil? Because fame and attention and celebrity are very, very attractive things to some people, and they can't help themselves. They will do whatever it takes to stay there.
So it's a deal with the devil because, bruh, and I'm going to say allegedly, but I think we all know what the truth is. If you are allegedly going to sign your children into this deal that you made in order to succeed.
What do you mean by that? I don't know what this is.
Yeah, come on. You know what I mean.
No, seriously.
Children of Will Smith.
Yeah, because people say that he... The children are brought into the business.
People are saying this. The children are brought into it. And the terms on which they were brought in were hidden until they weren't. And then when they came out, the terms of these deals are like, what? You did that?
Yeah.
What? And what? So this is why I think it's a deal with the devil. I think all human life is sacred and should be uplifted as much as possible.
Yeah, I agree with you.
More so, your own flesh and blood, whether it's your child or your parent, if you've got a 50-50 genetic thing going on with each other.
But then, that's evil.
Thank you.
It's evil, and we could still use words like good and evil.
Thank you.
I think that there are too many people in the world who are trying to get everyone else to use their terminology.
Right, so, right.
You don't have to be a religious person.
Right.
You don't even have to be a spiritual person, but you know evil when you see it, and you know good when you see it.
And people use the changing terminologies as an affirmation of their value system. They want to hear you say the words that they now believe in.
I mean, I think Hollywood is filled with evil people.
Cat Williams again.
Yeah.
He's, hey, dude, you can't change the word while we're still using it. Because suddenly, trans became, you know, you were no longer to say transition. This person is transitioning when they're changing a job from a high school teacher to an insurance salesperson. They're transitioning from one job to the other. Why are we using the word, nigga? And he says that a lot. You change the meaning of it. So today, what are these catchphrases that are triggering everybody? I'm on a spectrum. I got ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
Obsessive compulsive disorder.
Obsessive compulsive, yeah. People describe themselves in their biographies.
They
with
jump
these
to
days.
Say these things.
They can't wait to tell you what's mentally wrong with them.
They can't wait.
And inverted commas.
And I'm saying, hey, when we grew up, we had all those things you're talking about. But they were straightened out in a different way. Not straightened out, but they were addressed in a different way. So to answer the thing about good and evil, please, let's get back to what evil used to mean. And not go like...
What does it mean to you?
What, evil?
Yeah.
When you are...
Because, you know, the problem is, and I've had this conversation with very, very smart people and with not so smart people, and... Mm. The definition of it is where the problem starts. Mm. It's because we know what evil is if we encounter it. It gives you a certain vibe. It gives you a certain feeling.
Mm.
But the defining of it is a complicated thing.
Mm.
Because unless you draw on religious, spiritual, moral,
cliches.
Ethical things,
mm.
you're not going to be able to describe it properly.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to trick you or anything. I just want to know how you
no,
define it.
No, correct. It's a very difficult thing to describe because it suffers from objectivity and subjectivity.
Correct.
Yes, some people are able to look at it objective and some people are so subjectively involved in it that they don't call it evil.
Well, for example, if I'm a not particularly emotional person and I see somebody saying mean things to another person, I might not describe that as evil, but someone who's much more sensitive would say that's evil.
That's where the subject...
They're taking advantage of that person. Correct. They're making them feel horrible.
Correct. That's where the subjectivity-objectivity ratio comes in.
Right.
But then you ask me for my definition, and I think of myself as Kurt the Brave, so I'm going to try and answer.
Let's go.
Okay. So I think evil is, or evil happens, when an individual decides that they have authority over all things made by... I'm not going to say God because, you know, we're into a whole nother trick bag there. All things made by the life itself, right? When you claim dominion over those things and you exploit them to their detriment and to your advantage, that for me is evil.
I think it's a good definition.
I don't know.
It's as good as any of the best ones I've heard.
Okay.
Because it comes down to a person just giving up on... doing the right thing.
Correct.
And taking full advantage, using, abusing, there's no shame.
No shame,
right?
So by that definition that I was brave enough to offer, you can call pollution evil.
Yeah.
Because let's say an oil company is deliberately contaminating the water supply in the water table because it's lower expenses, higher profit margins. Depending on who you are, you can call that evil. But the dude on the top in the 1% who's got his Lamborghini stacked on each other, he goes, no, that's business, man. That's business.
Yeah.
You see? So you got to rely on your gut. And if you look at something and look away, you say, okay, I'm afraid to look at evil. Or you go look at it.
Bitcoin Butt says here, and he's talking to Simpiwe in the comment section, didn't Kanye West say he gave up his mother for fame?
He sure did.
He did, huh? Yeah, and people do, you see, sacrificing things to evil is the same motivation as sacrificing things to good, except that you have a different result.
Exactly right.
People who will sacrifice other people, their children, you mentioned earlier, happiness, their ability to feel shame, all of that. So they'll sacrifice that stuff up in order to attain an evil goal.
Yeah, and as soon as they cross that line, it's no longer an evil goal. It's my destiny to be that wealthy.
Yeah.
It's my destiny to be that powerful, to control the world X, Y, Z in this way, that way. And you go like, if you just looked around and saw what's happening, the results of your actions, you realize, hey, anyway.
Slippery Pickle says, Real Network, what does your guest think of Tyler Perry in a dress? I don't know anything about this story.
Tyler Perry is a fantastic actor.
Yeah.
A fantastic creator.
Sure.
And in our world, wearing a dress is just wearing wardrobe.
Yeah. In the art world, that stuff has been going on for a long time.
Hello.
The whole trance thing is not an issue in the art world.
Some like it hot. Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
I can't remember the year of production.
Must have been the 50s.
Yeah, but it was a black and white, I think. Tony Curtis and who was Lemon? I think Jack.
Jack Lemon.
Yeah. They were on a run from the mafia, just as a little backstory. They were musicians who needed to pay bills and things. And so they dressed as women and went on a woman's jazz tour on a train. Hilarious comedy. Wonderful, but a great story. So I've come to learn that putting on whatever you put on is just you presenting a character. It's not you.
Judas says in the comments, Let's Talk Man, our show here on The Real Network, covered the sensitive topic about Mac G and Mini D's controversial remarks and were lessons to be learned there also. So go and watch on The Real Network. Yes, Judas, thank you.
Cool.
It's a very good episode, made me laugh. And it's interesting to listen to. They get into, what could happen there for anybody.
Cool.
So you need to find out. Go and take a look. Let's just see what's here. Watching old P. Diddy clips today just slaps differently. Yeah, because you knew what was really going on, right? And Ellen DeGeneres gets a mention here as well.
Mm.
I love the one on Ellen with the kids. Listen, bad shit this. The catch is that you are the devil, said Goon. That's the deal you make. You are the devil.
Yeah, I remember that wonderful story. I wish I could. Maybe it's a Roald Dahl story. I wish I could remember it. I'll go look it up. Sorry. Where good and evil meet each other. And they say, I only exist because you exist.
So, yeah.
I wish I could remember.
Yeah, I know which book you're talking about.
Anyway, let's not have dead air while we scratch our old brains to look for thing. Let's move on.
But there's a Roald Dahl movie out at the moment.
No. Tell me.
Yeah, so I heard about this a year ago, and then they finally went into production. It's a movie about the life of Roald Dahl. I can't remember who's in it. One of our listeners, somebody will let me know.
Wow, cool.
But yeah, that would be fun to watch because he was a complicated person.
Yeah, and movies are no longer the thing, you know?
Yeah.
Television is the thing.
Right.
Internet.
Miniseries.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So a very brave effort by the producers to make a film in the first place and make one on Roald Dahl is even braver.
Yeah, because so a lot of people wouldn't know who he is.
Yes.
He's not like a football celebrity.
Yeah, it's not your average daily bunny chow consumption there.
This is interesting. ETV newscasters are excellent at following script. Zero critical thinking. Perfect puppet. Slippery. who do you rely on for news? Because so much of this stuff, that we are expected to take as gospel. And in the old days, we might have if it was said to us by an authoritative figure on TV. Now we look at the news and we're like, it could be fake.
So yes, 100% correct. So. In response to that, I withdrew from watching news. Like, you can lean. And I just committed to Al Jazeera for the picture.
Okay.
For the picture.
Okay.
Because Al Jazeera is an alternate. Must be too early.
Don't worry.
Alternate global source of news, right?
Sure.
So I watch there, and there's a lot of global news. And the rest I get from reading, the reader news. So now I don't want to give a plug, but I read a very progressive daily digital news outlet. And I form my own opinions. I never reply, I never respond because there's always a hatchet job going on in the comments.
Oh my God, no.
Yeah, always.
You don't want to do that.
No, but I really enjoy reading, I'm going to say it, Daily Maverick.
Okay.
I really enjoy reading that. And sometimes I'll click on all the stories and I'll get halfway through and go, this is a boring story.
Yeah, it's boring stories, but they're also stories that you can tell, especially the opinion stuff. Yes. I'm not that interested in hearing from journalists
anymore.
And you
can't do this with news and say, fast forward, you have to change the channel. Whereas if you with television news, whereas if you're reading, you can take a moment, process,
and go, I don't care about this.
Now this is boer my viermark blik. I'm not interested.
There we go. Yeah, move on.
Cheers. Yes.
Gareth, did you see your buddy Penuel brought out a book with him as Jesus or God on the cover? Bitcoin Boy. I didn't, but I'm not surprised. He's always been talking about his religion of Penuelism, and I wish him luck with it. I don't know how well it's going to go down with everybody. I think there are a lot of people who think there was something blasphemous there. But you know what? Attention seeking is one of the things that Penwell has. So I hope it works out for him. That's all I'm going to say. The Devil's Advocate. Remember that movie?
Fantastic.
That was a good
film.
Example of how your life could change when you sign a contract with the devil
Fantastic
himself.
Fantastic film.
Beautiful. That was
First of all,
Keanu
let's,
Reeves.
Let's,
no, Al Pacino.
No, let's
Al Pacino.
Give the local lady the first credit.
Charlize.
Thank you.
Charlize.
And then Al Pacino. Who's the?
Oh yeah, because that's where he does the line where he's the devil, right? And he's standing at his desk.
And Keanu Reeves goes like, "I got this job, man. I got this, are we gonna
and he
be
goes,
like a
vanity is my favorite sin." I love that.
Nailed
I love
it.
That.
You nailed it.
He's Al Pacino. I mean, at his best,
he's
was
beyond
unstoppable,
beyond,
right?
So in Marathon Man, yes, I think it was Marathon Man. He gets taken in by the American Nazis for interrogation. And they're drilling his teeth as a torture for him to tell the truth. And Laurence Olivier played the baddie dentist drilling the thing. So all Laurence Olivier's line was, "Is it safe? Is it safe? Is what safe? We don't know." And he keeps drilling into the tooth like root canal vibes. And eventually he doesn't speak. So in order to look like this for the shoot, Al Pacino stayed awake for 3 days in order to look like he was freaked out by the... And when he came onto the set like this, and he said, "What's wrong, Al Pacino?" And he told him the story. Laurence Olivier said, "My dear boy, why don't you just try acting it?" And we got a call here.
What's that? Oh, Dr. Hanan. I haven't seen him in a while. How fantastic, Dr. Hanan, to have you here. Now, we've got a couple of things to talk to the good doctor about. First of all, how are you, Doc?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, guys?
Nice to see you. And you notice that because James isn't here, shame, his grand died, so he's dealing with that. But Simpiwe got you on time for us, which is very, very nice.
That's Simpiwe.
I know. Isn't it great? Okay, so this is Dr. Hanan, Kurt. We talked to him.
Pleased to meet you, doctor. How do you do?
We
nice
get hold
to
of him.
You.
We get Who hold of him once a week because we're all nutcases and he's here to help sort us out. So, all right, what I wanted to talk to you about today, and this came up as a result of something that's in the news at the moment. This whole P. Diddy trial's underway, right? And we've heard disturbing accounts of all kinds of acts involving humiliation. This ex-girlfriend of his, allegedly he forced her to be intimate with other men while he watched. He would abuse her publicly and in private. From a psychological perspective, Doc, what drives a person to engage in or even enjoy, take pleasure from these kinds of degrading things? And how prevalent is it? How often does this happen?
Well, the underlying mechanism, the psychological foundation for people behaving this way is the acquisition of power. People like to feel in control, especially of the things that they naturally can't control, which is other people. Right. Once you can control other people, really at will, then you feel incredibly powerful. You feel incredibly in control. You feel as though you can pretty much rule over things that you shouldn't rule over, which is, again, unpredictable things such as people. So when somebody has literally everything that they need, everything that they want, they can literally click their fingers and get whatever they desire, they start wanting to challenge themselves and acquire more and more power in actually more and more inappropriate ways. And P. Diddy could get whatever he wants, whenever he wants, except for humiliating people. And he's reached a point where he he could step really out of the realm of what's appropriate and control people through, you know, sexual kind of escapades and really embarrassing people in the way that he has, because that for him was a sign, well, look what I can do to other people with really zero consequences, almost like, what are you going to do about it? And in his case, it's kind of like the natural human reaction is, you know, take a step over a line, you extend what's normal for you, then you step over that line again. And before you know it, you're a million miles ahead of where you thought you would be, because you've taken a little bit more power, a little bit more power with no consequences. And eventually you get to the point where he has gotten to.
Is it a personality thing? Or would anyone in a position of, you know, complete power and authority and wealth and thumbing your nose at other people, would all of us turn into him? Or is it a personality thing? Or is there something darker going on? Because ordinary people are sitting there thinking, I wonder if I would be treating my girlfriend like this if I were a famous rapper.
Yeah. So Gareth, I heard a little bit of your conversation just before I logged on, and you were talking about evil, and I don't want to excuse evil. Evil is evil is evil is evil. And what he's done was sounds and looks like evil. And if it sounds like a duck and it looks like a duck, then it is a duck. And the question is, can you become evil, or you're born evil? Well, who knows? I mean, it's part of DNA, part of temperament, and certainly part of your upbringing. But again, if you give somebody so much power and they're able to take control with really zero consequences for what they're doing, even though it might look bad, but people are willing to accept it. And what ends up happening, you end up with the Emperor's New Clothes scenario, where you surround yourself with yes men, people that accept and acknowledge and enable your behavior, and you start treating people badly and they tell you you're the king of the world, and you start treating people even worse, and they tell you you're still the king of the world, and you take a bit more and a bit more and a bit more and a bit more, and eventually you end up acting, you know, the way that he did.
Okay, so I still don't know if I've heard a satisfactory definition of evil. You know, Kurt had a very good one earlier. But how would you define that? Because you might have even come across evil in your practice, where you're talking to someone, they think they're telling you something completely normal, and you go, whoa, hang on a second. This is not something I expected to hear. I know what evil is when I hear it. Do you have a definition?
So my standard for treating people is always with kindness. And the moment your intention, doesn't matter the outcome, even though the outcome, of course, matters, but the moment the intention is to go out and hurt somebody, that for me is evil. And of course, there are degrees of consequences for how people behave. You can have, let's call it, very low degree or low consequential outcomes, and you can have very high consequential outcomes where countries go to war and you really can really hurt someone. So my standard is, what's your intention? And if your intention is to go out and hurt somebody, that for me is evil.
Bravo, Doctor. Bravo. Yeah. Well done. Well said. I couldn't agree with you more. Fantastic.
And you were also nodding your head when we were talking about the whole Diddy thing, because of the humiliation and the degrading thing.
Yeah, and just a bit of kudos to the good doctor there for juxtaposing the control and power with each other.
Mm.
I just like to bring in this good versus evil thing. If you put power and control together as one thing and you decide this is going to go for evil, then you get those outcomes. If you put power and control together and say, I'm going to send this for good, then your power and your control is an uplifter. So the thing he said about power and control, I'd like to just separate them a little bit, because they're not mutually inclusive. Power can work for good and for evil. So if you have control, you can have control over yourself, over your situation, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You see, and you can have power to uplift people, and that's a good thing. It's when they start to get messed up together and the edges get blurred. And like the good doctor said, I can get away with this now without consequences.
Yeah.
And get it. And the fermentation just gets deeper and deeper until there's no way back. You think you are the king of the world.
Yeah, you got anything to add to that, Doc?
Well, once you become a celebrity, people really want to touch you, want to hold you. Gareth, I've been to lunch with you where people naturally come up to you and they literally want to hug you because they know you. You've been on their screens forever and they obviously know you more than you know them. And they want to hug you and they want to talk to you and they want to speak to you and they want to get your opinion and they want to get your perspective. You've been in those shoes. Now, multiply that by 100,000 every single day for 20, 25, 30 years. And that's what these guys had. They can literally, in their minds, do no wrong. And you can really take advantage of somebody who's that vulnerable with you, who puts you on that pedestal. Because the moment somebody puts you on the pedestal, you can literally, you know, at will, get them to pretty much do anything. And you extend the boundaries and extend the boundaries really with no consequences. And eventually you get to become really, really nasty and really evil. Because now the intention is no longer on how do I do good and how much good can I do, but rather how can I control the person for my own benefit, for my own pleasure, at their expense. As a matter of fact, these narcissists don't even look at it in the sense that how do I inflict the damage, but rather what is it, what good does it do for me, irrespective of what it does to other people. They fall in love with their own image so much so that the other person doesn't actually exist. They don't see like a child. They actually revert back to being children. Children are unable to see the results or consequences of their behavior. That's why a child can have a tantrum in the middle of Woolworths and not worry about who's watching and how much it affects other people. And these adults that literally revert into children, they do not see how their actions, because they don't care how their actions affect other people. So they can literally at will make you do whatever they want at their pleasure without really worrying of how it affects the world around them.
Quickly, because we don't have a lot of time here, but I want to ask you about this Cassie, the girlfriend of Diddy. You know, a lot of people break up with boyfriends and girlfriends and they go, ah, you know, he's such a narcissist. She's such a narcissist. They love using this word. And it's become like a catch-all term for everything that we don't like about somebody. But can we just have a little bit of clarity on narcissism? And can we just have a little bit of an explanation of how you ascertain where things might have gone in a narcissistic direction? And it doesn't apply everywhere. Let's be clear about that too, because I do think it's, you know, it's become so cliched and hackneyed now. Everybody says this person's a narcissist, and we don't even go back to the definition anymore.
Yeah. So we throw these titles around, which actually make a big difference. So how many people go, I'm depressed, or, yeah, you know, I'm anxious, or,
yeah, you know, all the time.
Maybe this person's a narcissist all the time. And it loses its meaning. So without going into the technical definition of a narcissist, don't call somebody a narcissist unless you have that relationship with them where you require them to look after your needs. And a narcissist is somebody that looks after themselves at no bearing and no real thought about how it impacts you. But not all relationships need to impact you or need to consider you. So if you have that kind of relationship where the other person needs to consider you, but they don't, that makes them a selfish person and that you should negotiate. And if they're not prepared to negotiate, well, that relationship shouldn't exist. But if you have a relationship where you need to negotiate the other person looking after your own needs, and they do, well, that's what makes a good relationship. I always tell people compromise makes for a good relationship, where I'm looking after my needs as well as yours, and you're looking after your needs as well as mine. And narcissist, in inverted commas, is such a loaded word, but a narcissist or a selfish person that is looking after their needs without real consideration or compromise of yours.
Fantastic.
Okay, good. And not all relationships are so important that you can start calling someone a narcissist because they're not fulfilling your needs.
Most relationships are not that important.
Who do you think you are, you know? Like, what?
Completely.
I'm not your dad, your brother, your mom, your boyfriend. Just relax.
Ish.
Call me narcissist. 100%. Ish. You know? There's a lot of people who are listening to this right now going, yeah, that counts for me in my relationship. Eesh. Anyway, thanks, Doc. That's excellent stuff.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right, we'll catch up with you in a week.
See you then. Bye, guys.
Lovely. Take care. Dr. Hanan Bushkin. And some pretty good advice
there. Hey, on
and
the
definitions,
button.
Man. You know, again, button. Either words mean something, and the definition helps you to understand it, or people are using a word to manipulate.
Well, I think the answer is because we keep lowering the threshold of education. Let's just use the cliche.
Yeah.
That our understanding of the world becomes less. Because our studying of the world, education, is diminishing.
Right.
And so people pick up these cliches and say, oh, if I use the word narcissist,
I'll sound clever and I can make this work for me.
Yeah. And so there's like 100,000 words like that mm-hmm. people just assimilate and redefine, interpret according to their own.
Well, you said it earlier and Dr. Hanan mentioned it again now. These people who call themselves anxious and depressed and obsessive compulsive and... You know, they've got bipolar disorder or whatever. Yeah. First of all, unless you've got a diagnosis, you can't be calling yourself those
things. That's right, because you're giving yourself a free hall pass to be a dick.
That's exactly it. Yeah. You want immunity.
Thank you, from dickism.
but you want the remember in Survivor, they had the immunity idol, which that's meant that people couldn't vote you off.
That's right.
So I think for a lot of people, online but in real life, they want that immunity idol so that they can't be voted off the island.
Yeah.
I have special powers.
Yeah.
These are the things that protect me. Now, you can't be mean to me. You can't not do things that I like.
Yeah, because I know what narcissism means, and I'm going to accuse you of that. I know what this, and means, and I got this. You're right. 100%.
And screw you.
Yeah.
You don't get that. Nobody gets immunity.
That's right, because we're all equal here. You know, we all have the same level of emotion when it comes to I need to be appreciated.
Right. So there's a funny video, and I wonder if Flex or Simpiwa can find it. The Brooklyn Bridge in New York, famous Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
So some boat went under it with three masts, and it was the boat was too big, and the bridge was too low.
Wow!
And so it snapped these masts like toothpicks.
Wow!
But I think it looks like a fairly expensive craft, so I think that would have cost a lot of money to fix.
Oh, for sure.
Don't know if anyone is injured, because that's obviously another worry.
Yeah.
But you just see these things snapping. See if you can find that picture for the next hour. That'll be quite cool.
Yeah.
And we'll get into a whole lot more. We've got Kurt Egelhoff here with us. We're having fun on a Monday morning. I hope you had a good weekend. Tell us what you got up to and jump in on the comments. We want to know all about it. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. All about it. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.